Hello, I'm Richard Gisbert, and you're at The Listening Post, where we don't cover the news, we cover the way the news is covered. We've been doing this program for 14 years, and we've never seen a story like the COVID-19 pandemic. The number of people infected, the number of countries affected, the amount of news coverage the story attracted, all of them unprecedented. The Listening Post led with coverage of the pandemic for months, 12 straight weeks. We've never come close to that with any other news story. On this special edition of our program, we're going to take you back and document the way we saw the pandemic story grow, moving from country to country, exposing the failings of various governments and their leaders, while raising so many societal issues, ranging from public health to personal privacy. You will also see how our program had to adapt to life under lockdown, the way journalists everywhere did, just to stay safe. Our starting point for our first program of 2021 is our initial report on the COVID-19 pandemic. The date, February 1st, 2020. About a week and a half ago, on January 23rd, the Chinese authorities shut down the city of Wuhan. Population, 11 million. And ground zero for the outbreak of the coronavirus. In short order, 17 more cities were quarantined. The total number of people affected, nearly 60 million. The death toll is now in the hundreds, the number infected in the thousands, and the coronavirus, like the coverage of this story, has gone global. Our starting point this week is the city of Wuhan. No one can control the timing of a viral outbreak, a potential pandemic. But in a country like China, they can control, or at least try to control, what people know about it. On January 18th, the city of Wuhan, China's seventh largest, hosted a potluck dinner attended by about 40,000 families. The participants would not have known that 2 weeks earlier in Hong Kong, the media were already comparing this virus to the SARS outbreak of 2003, warning it could be moving from human to human. There was none of that in the local media coverage of the giant dinner in Wuhan. Not even a mention that we could find of the coronavirus, the fact that all those families may have been at risk. And like local news outlets, the national media, most of which are controlled by Beijing, were focusing on other stories.
We had stories about Xi Jinping going to Myanmar, Xi Jinping going to Yunnan, and talking about how strong the Chinese military is, and kind of buried a little bit is the story about the coronavirus outbreak that is at the forefront of everyone's attention.
This started to become a big story, not because of what we heard inside China, but because of what we started to hear from sources outside of China. We started to do some reporting going out to Beijing Railway Station to try to see what the feeling was.
People here are looking to the government to do more.
We spoke to 12 people on that day. Seven out of those people had no idea what we were talking about. And the people who did know about it said to us, I think the government has it in hand. I think they know what they're doing.
Of all the casualties of this coronavirus, none has made more news in China than Dr. Li Wenliang. On December 30th, Li used a closed messaging group to tell colleagues of the seriousness of the strain. He said he did not intend the message to be shared, which it was. He was then taken into custody and forced to apologize for spreading rumors. Li contracted the virus, succumbing on February 7th and unleashing a wave of fury online, the likes of which the Chinese authorities seldom see or tolerate.
When there are so many people feel so strongly about his death, it won't be wise for the authorities to really just like block all the comments.
对于李文亮医生的不幸去世，我们表示沉痛的哀悼。
The state media, they do report on his death, but the language they use are mostly focusing on, you know, we have so much respect for this doctor, for what he did as a doctor, not for what he did as a whistleblower.
当然，这样的职业精神也体现在此时此刻仍然奋战在抗击疫情一线的千千万万的医护人员身上。
They are focusing on one part they want people to focus on about Dr. Li Wenliang, but not really on the part that people care about mostly, about the freedom of speech.
Doctors, officials, aid workers have all been described in heroic terms. The standard for that kind of messaging, the emphasis on the collective response over accountability, is set by state-controlled channels like CGTN and CCTV.
日夜奋战迎难而上的作风让人感动。
Here we are, you know, together, and every Chinese person has to fight, and we're there for the nation. And of course, President Xi himself has appeared in the limelight of the media for the first time since the outbreak of the crisis.
信心百倍地打好这一场阻击战。
He video chatted with doctors from Wuhan. One thing we have to note is that Xi Jinping has never set a foot in Wuhan so far. But what we really want is to really know what the central government has in plan to really cure the disease, to really respond to people's demands for freedom of speech. But I think those core questions, they probably will never get answered.
With the coronavirus grinding life to a halt around the world, millions holed up at home, people are desperately searching for reliable information. But what if two primary sources of news, the government and the most watched television news channel, are setting aside medical science in favor of politically driven fiction? That's what Americans are dealing with. You'll notice a slightly different look to the following piece, Skype interviews, lockdown style. It's part of the story. Our starting point this week is Washington.
Here to discuss is Fox News medical contributor, Dr. Nicole Sapphire.
A prediction about the coverage of the coronavirus and misinformation made about 3 weeks ago on America's most watched news channel.
The economic and emotional toll by misinformation is going to hit us much harder than this virus is in itself.
Of all the networks to sound the alarm about COVID-19 and misinformation, that soundbite was on Fox News.
It definitely is quite ironic. Fox News has been a steady source of misinformation about the coronavirus, peddling the idea that it's no big deal.
I feel like the more I learn about this, the less there is to worry about.
I was about to say the same thing.
So the irony is not lost that Fox is calling against misinformation while spreading it.
The Fox effect can be measured. A poll conducted by the Pew Research Center found that Fox News viewers are almost five times as likely as MSNBC viewers to believe that the media have greatly exaggerated the threat of the coronavirus. Given that Fox's audience is the oldest of the major networks and therefore the most vulnerable, the channel's coverage is truly dangerous. The network hitched its wagon to Donald Trump long ago, and its coverage has mirrored the president's shifting position on the coronavirus story. Mediaite.com monitors broadcast news coverage in the U.S. It bolted together a chronology of Donald Trump's soundbites on COVID-19 over a six-week period. As the number of cases in the U.S. climbed alarmingly, Trump's message changed drastically.
How concerned are you?
Well, we pretty much shut it down. You know, a lot of people think that goes away in April. Within a couple of days, it's going to be down to close to zero. There's a chance that it won't spread. It's going to disappear. One day, it's like a miracle.
Almost everybody that we see is getting better. And it could be everybody, too.
Well, they're going to have vaccines, I think, relatively soon.
What do you say to Americans who are concerned that you're not taking this seriously enough and that some of your statements don't match what your health experts are saying?
That's CNN, fake news.
Trump and his allies try and manipulate the rhetoric and shift blame, but they cannot manipulate the virus with the misinformation. And we do have a free press here in the United States that will continue to report out statistics of confirmed cases and death rates. And even though we'll be getting that information, Trump and right-wing media will definitely continue to shift the blame.
This is a virus. It's not a political movement, and it doesn't have an ideology, and it doesn't care about your ideology. It just has a way of attacking our bodies. So lack of clarity, the attempts to not really grapple with the threat that the whole world is facing cost us time, and maybe it cost lives.
The COVID-19 pandemic is a news story like no other. And like journalists around the world, we are reporting on this from our homes. This week, we're examining the unprecedented rise in the surveillance and tracking of citizens and the long-term implications for society. Political leaders everywhere are likening the COVID-19 fight to a war. And it wouldn't be the first time that extraordinary security measures imposed during a time of war proved permanent and problematic. Our starting point this week is your mobile phone. Mobile phones have never been as vital as they are today in the midst of this pandemic. Billions of people are using their phones to find potentially life-saving information, to learn about the virus, how it infects, what the symptoms are, and how to get help. And depending on where you live, the authorities are using your phones too, as weapons in the fight against COVID-19. They're tapping into your data, finding out where you are, where you've been, telling you where not to go. The question is, what else are they using your data for? And how long do they intend to use it?
Some of the most egregious surveillance abuses have come from China. Highly invasive measures to monitor whether individuals should be allowed access to public transit, whether they should be allowed to go to work, to go to school. And the same exact technology can also be used to monitor political protests, religious movements, and any other form of constitutionally protected activity.
The list of countries using phone data to surveil grows longer by the day. In Italy, the authorities are tapping into it to determine if citizens are adhering to the lockdown rules. Singapore is posting information online on individual cases, detailed descriptions of those infected and who they have crossed paths with. And the Trump administration in Washington has consulted with big tech, companies like Facebook and Google, on how the phone location data that they hold can be added to the new surveillance mix. That has set off alarm bells in Congress and well beyond the U.S. on the implications for individual privacy.
The coronavirus crisis is a civil crisis. It's not a terror. It's not a war. It's something else. Once this crisis will be over, we might find ourselves with no virus, that's good, but with no privacy either. And that will be a major loss for democratic countries and societies.
Bolsonaro dedicou alguns minutos ao descumprimento das medidas de distanciamento social.
It's not that Brazil doesn't do social distancing. 24 of the 27 states have those measures in place. It's just that the president doesn't do it.
So Bolsonaro has been downplaying the risks of coronavirus right now. He's been saying that the media and that scientists are trying to create some sort of panic in society. He's been going out in public, not wearing a mask. And he's coughing a lot and taking pictures and selfies. And so in that way, maybe he's the most irresponsible leader in the world right now. And he's also been incentivizing his followers to attack the media. Journalists, mostly global journalists, out in the street reporting, you know, they're using their mask, they're trying to do social distancing. And people are grabbing the mics from them and saying, you know, Globo is trash, and basically creating an environment of harassment so that the media can't do their job. This is absolutely inspired by Jair Bolsonaro and by his machine of digital influencers that he and his sons operate.
To Jair Bolsonaro and his supporters, the Brazilian media have caught the COVID-19 hysteria bug, criticizing him unfairly for wanting to get people back to work come what may. He's borrowed heavily from Donald Trump's fake news playbook and taken it further. He recently mocked journalists who risked infection to do their jobs.
Esse pessoal diz que eu tô errado e você tem que ficar em casa. Não tô com medo do coronavírus, não?
Eu não tô.
He's attacking specifically some of the biggest corporatist media outlets in Brazil. Globo, The Network, and Quality Newspapers in Brazil, that are also very powerful institutions.
Ou você é da Folha, não quer responder para a Folha. Qual é o teu jornal? Qual é o teu jornal? Qual é o teu jornal? Não quero papo com Globo também.
So he materializes his battle against the powerful elites of Brazil by confronting these media outlets.
Now there are growing concerns about the deadly coronavirus.
Iran's single biggest jump in deaths, rising more than 100 to 724 overall.
The coronavirus story is sweeping the world, creating a booming market for information.
More than 132,000 officials.
The ratings for news programs in India are up by more than 50%. In the UK, a reported 64% of Britons are watching more live TV, including news, than they did pre-lockdown. And evening newscasts in the US are seeing their highest ratings in 20 years. But are people getting news and numbers they can use? When they look at the data, the number of COVID-19 cases in South Korea seems high, twice that of India. But for every 1 million South Koreans, more than 7,500 have been tested. For every 1 million Indians, the number tested is just over 100. And that is just one example of how much of the data that we are consuming is inherently flawed.
And so the data that we have on spread of the coronavirus is always a function of testing. And we know that the testing response has been very patchy. And yet I think that we still have seen a reliance on numbers which are informed by that huge failure to test and are weakened by it. And yet the numbers, I think, are presented with maybe more authority sometimes than they should be.
Not only do governments have to test, they have to be straight when reporting the numbers. North Korea claims it does not have a single case, despite a sizable outbreak across its southern border. That zero figure then gets plugged into global tracking platforms. Until pressured into recently changing its practices, China did not consider a positive COVID test to be an official case, unless the person tested showed symptoms as well. That has skewed the statistics and cast doubt on Beijing's claims, echoed throughout the Chinese media, that the outbreak there is now under control.
So putting all those things together, I think it's really hard to have a reasonable discussion about what the death rate from this thing is. And I think our readers need to understand that, and we probably shouldn't be trying to convince them that it's exact right now.
It's not just the medical science that is coming up short right now. It's the science of economics. American banks trying to forecast how far U.S. gross domestic product will drop due to the pandemic are all over the place. Predictions from 10% to 40%. As one writer in The Atlantic magazine put it last week, that's not a sign of economists having an informed debate. It's a sign that economists have no idea what's going on, which puts them in the same category as journalists reporting on COVID-19 and the politicians deciding what to do about it. No one really knows. This is the part of the news story where the correspondent tends to say, but one thing is clear, or this much we know. But that scripting device doesn't really work with this story because there is so little that is clear. For a news industry based on facts that trades in clarity, the coronavirus is like a plague of uncertainty. Get used to it, because it's going to be like this for a while.
And I think it's very important for journalists to be able to convey that uncertainty to the public, not instilling fear and panic, but just telling them what we know and what are the boundaries of our knowledge versus the boundaries of our uncertainty, because it's extremely important to differentiate these two.
So uncertainty is the only certainty, and learning how to live with insecurity is the only security. A demand for precision and certainty is just something that science statistics isn't able to deliver. We don't know right now. We won't know for a while.
This pandemic has attacked populations, and the response in country after country has amounted to an assault on privacy. The methods the authorities, aided by big tech companies, have put in place follow our movements, who we meet. The privacy story unfolding in the UK is on another level. It's about all the new health data produced by COVID-19, the caseloads, transmission rates, the testing, combined with the medical records the NHS, the National Health Service, already has on its servers, such as underlying conditions, demographics. It's a giant gold mine of data that, when aggregated and deciphered, could help the NHS better direct its resources, hone its treatments, and save lives. The core issues are, who gets access to that health data, and what will they do with it? Because this goes beyond mere contact tracing and where people have been. It hits much closer to home.
Let's be very clear. Your medical record is like a fingerprint. The sort of data that's in it, detailed, linked data about an individual's health or events in their life, they're all inherently identifying. Those linked events can pick you out from any aggregation of data. So the data's not and will never truly be anonymous.
That raised alarms, as did the Johnson government's choice of private sector partners to analyze that data. It hired Faculty, a British firm that worked for the Leave side in the Brexit referendum. And then there's Palantir, an American data analytics company whose founder is a libertarian Donald Trump supporter who has said that he does not believe that freedom and democracy are compatible. The name Palantir is a Lord of the Rings reference to a crystal ball that can see into the future and the past.
They're a data mining firm that cut their teeth assisting the CIA in Iraq and Afghanistan. Last year, they became pretty famous for providing data support to Immigration and Customs Enforcement in the United States and their brutal regime of deportations. Now that there's a global health crisis, there's more money in public health, and the company has decided to pivot. And the question is whether that's really the kind of business you want as a partner with your most treasured asset, your national health system. If we're going to suddenly let data miners get access to that data, we have got to see the terms on which those companies have access, that they are not going to be able to exploit it for unfair gain in ways that none of us ever agreed to.
The technology better work, because the price, if you value your privacy, is steep.
All of India will be shut from today, a total lockdown.
India's is the world's biggest lockdown. With more than 1.3 billion citizens affected, no other country comes close. And nowhere has the virus generated such a mass movement of people. Millions of migrant workers trapped in cities far from home, with no way to get back. Countless numbers of homeless with nowhere to isolate. Half a billion already living below the poverty line. March 24th in New Delhi, Prime Minister Narendra Modi issues the lockdown order. More than 3 months after the outbreak in China, 7 weeks after the World Health Organization declared it a pandemic, and Modi was giving Indians a grand total of 4 hours' notice.
Early on in the lockdown, I was staggered by the fact that big corporate media...
Dr. Madan, my first question is to you. How bad is it right now?
...were not going out of their studios to tell the story.
We need to avoid panic as of now.
The people who were hardest hit by this lockdown were the poorest Indian citizens.
It's heartbreaking to see little children, women, walking like this hundreds of kilometers.
So my focus became bring home the story of people who did not have a voice to tell their own stories.
Just hours before imposing the lockdown, Prime Minister Modi met with the news media. Not with reporters. He hasn't granted them a press conference in 5 years. Modi met with their bosses, the owners of media outlets, the senior editors. You won't hear a word that Modi said. The video the government released was silent.
TV editors who were invited to this conference, video conference, they did not ask a single question. And if you go to those news channels, you will find 99.99% there is absolutely no criticism of Mr. Modi's politics or policies. I would call them maybe an extension of the propaganda machine of the government.
Then there are the double standards in the reporting on India's religious communities. When a Muslim movement held a gathering in New Delhi that spread the virus, it was eviscerated on the airwaves.
क्या निजामुद्दीन में जो कुछ घटा, वो एक जिहाद था? क्या वो कोरोना जिहाद था?
But when the Hindu-led government in the state of Uttar Pradesh did the same thing, the coverage was scant, and a journalist who reported on the story was taken into police custody. Wherever it has traveled, the coronavirus has exposed institutional failings and societal divides. In India's case, it starts with the poor, unprotected by governments, ignored by corporate media. The treatment of Muslims has been a gradual slide from discrimination to flat-out demonization, again led by politicians, reinforced on the airwaves. Sometimes it takes a big news event to remind a country of what it has become, what it really is. And news events don't come any bigger than COVID-19. Back in February, when we produced our first report on the coverage of the coronavirus, the number of cases had just exceeded 12,000. Now, it's around 70 million. Back then, 259 people had succumbed, most of them in China. More than 1.5 million people have died since. With the first of the vaccines just being rolled out, and so many countries feeling the effects of a second wave, the pandemic is still a long way from being overtaken as the biggest news story on the planet, the biggest story most of us have ever seen. Prepare for more cases, more coverage, and more examination of the way the COVID-19 pandemic is reported here at The Listening Post.